Sean Alexander joins us on Sports Byline, running back who played 9 seasons in the NFL, 8 of those with the Seattle Seahawks after an outstanding career at the University of Alabama. He was picked in the first round by Seattle and went on to rush for more than 9,000 yards. And in 2005, he set the NFL record for touchdowns with 28 and was the NFL's MVP. He also was named to the NFL's 2000 All-Decade Team. I know you grew up, Sean, in Florence, Kentucky. Tell me a little bit about that area.
Well, Florence, Kentucky, when I was there, was a little small town. I'd say 20,000. And the whole county might maybe 40. And it's grown a lot since then. But, you know, it was one of those towns where you knew everybody. You weren't surprised that in every school, somebody in your class, there was a teacher, and the parent was the teacher of your friend. You know, you could walk down the neighbor, and I lived in a little small apartment, Shenandoah Apartments, and my mom could basically come out of her apartment and scream, "Sean Duran," that was my older brother, and we would know. Somebody would say, "Hey, your mom just called. We can hear the echo from, you know, from even though it was a couple neighborhoods over," and everybody could run in, and it was really, really sweet. You know, growing up, most of my family's from Covington, Kentucky, or Cincinnati, and those are the poor areas, but my mom and my dad had decided that they wanted to give us a chance of not having to be caught into an identity crisis of this is the highest you can get to. And they thought the best way was for us to move into Florence, which was kind of like a country town, 97% white. That area became our life and became our family. And we were really thankful for that decision our mom made.
You know, your parents divorced when you were 11, and you and your older brother then were raised by your mother. And the one thing I know in the years of talking to black athletes is the strength of a black woman in the family. Tell me a little bit about your mom and how she influenced you as you were growing up.
You know, my mom deserves a lot of credit because, like I tell people, I didn't know until I got to college that I was the poor kid in the nice area. when I saw us eating steak, and then we come in there, we have chicken or whatever, and I was like, wait, we eat like this every day? and some kids were like, yeah. I was like, oh, I didn't know. And I'm not saying that we were the woe is me, we don't have food to eat, but that was eating that good was not daily. And so that was one thing. But my mom also had she had this thing about her that, you know, today they call it swag, but it was this confidence that even if you're in a white school, we're not going to make this thing about race. Even though you're tall and skinny, we're not going to make this about you not looking cool. You know, we don't have the clothes to wear, we're not going to make this about money. You are so important and special because that's how God made you. And I was like, okay, and so this is kind of how I was raised. You know, if you heard me talk, you know, I'll say, oh, yeah, I was the good-looking one of the family. And, you know, but if you hear my brothers, we're all the good-looking ones, my half-brothers, my blood brother, you know, my sisters. We all carry that about us, and it was really because, you know, this is how my mom kind of drilled this in us. You're special because God made you special. You're beautiful because God made you beautiful. And then my mom also did a couple other things. I clearly think about my faith when I think about my mom because, though not perfect, I rarely did not see her sitting on the balcony reading her Bible, talking about life, not scared to be vulnerable with what's really going on, at us being able to vulnerably come to her with real-life topics and issues, what's going on with us or our friends. And so that was just very key. And then the other thing I remember about my mom, very special, and she's still living, and she's coming to see the grandkids here soon. And all my kids are excited because the grandma brings all the greatest snacks and treats. But but my mom, I see my mom give money to cousins and aunties and uncles, and then I've seen our lights come off before. And I think that when you have a person that's willing to give when it's going to hurt, it sets up something inside of you that's a little bit greater than I'm just going to give you what I got. It's like, hey, if we're going to be loyal, if we're going to do life together, you're going to get whenever I got it, you're going to have a shot to get it. And it was really a beautiful thing.
One thing you never did was ditch school, because what did your mom do for a living?
Well, my mom now is a truancy officer. So she would kind of get on people for that, but it worked perfectly for her because she was a truancy officer before she actually took that job. You know, she worked at Procter & Gamble when we were in school, And she was one of the senior advisors and making sure that the people were getting the products for anything. So she knew how to relate well. But I graduated in 95, and the Columbine thing happened in 94. And she decided, hey, you're going to go off school. I'm going to go back to college and get a psychology degree so I can go be a part of the Boone County school system and help kids and families that need it. And so a lot of times when kids are missing school, it's usually something bigger than just not having a ride to school. It's usually something that's going on with the family. And she's all about that, trying to give more of herself to go impact a life for a family that really needs it.
In your senior season at Boone County High School, you rushed for 3,166 yards and a state record 54 touchdowns. You were named Kentucky's Mr. Football. I know in small-town America, because I spent some time in West Virginia, I know that sports is a big thing, particularly at the high school level. What was Friday or Saturday night game night like in Boone County?
You know, I did not understand that it was not normal for people to shut down their jobs, their week, their weekend, you know, for Friday night football. And so when people would talk about that in Texas or in Florida, I would say that would make sense because we were like that in Kentucky, Northern Kentucky, and we were like that in Cincinnati. You know, football was king where I was from. And I still have people come up to me today. The men are a little bit older now, and they're, I was a truck driver, and I would pull my truck over. I'd make sure I had the route to go through y'all's town, and I would pull my truck over off the expressway so we could watch the game from the highway. And we'd have other people say, oh yeah, I went and saw Alexander play when he was this age, or when he was a junior back in '93, '94. And people come up to me all the time, and they tell me the stories because that was normal. And then this little regional cable thing called ESPN showed up at that time too, and they started filming some of the games and following me around, and that brought it even to a higher level of just going around and knowing that people were seeing our little small town, and it was creating a great buzz for our community and for a great pride for what our town really loves, which was football and family.
You mentioned about being 97% white. What about the assimilation into an atmosphere like that, being an African-American? And did football ease that to some degree? Because I know you were known as Alexander the Great, and you had your high school number 37 retired a few weeks before your graduation. But what was it like for a black family, a black person in a 97% white environment?
You know, because we grew up there, we didn't just come out there for high school. Because we grew up there, there was definitely pockets and many pockets of relationships that were just real. You know, I think that when we got to high school, that was the first time that we actually saw some of my white friends have the stress of, wait a minute, this kid, because of the color of his skin, is not one of us. And I saw them wrestle with that, which then we end up having to wrestle with it too. But overall, because we were in that public school system from first grade all the way through, there was some tense moments in high school, but for the most part of it, it was well received because, you know, my brother was on the academic team. I was on the academic team. My brother played quarterback on the Pee Wee teams. I was the running back on the Pee Wee teams. Some of my other closer friends that were black, there was a handful of us that were black that were in that community that we all moved in at the same time, first, second, third, through the elementary years. And we were all together, blacks and whites, we all had friends, and it just wasn't a big deal. And so there is always that issue of somebody that was raised thinking that the color of your skin makes a difference, and we had to handle those situations. There was definitely one of my other friends that got in a fight over, you know, some names being called in the school system, and it kind of created this intensity for everybody in the locker room in high school and also on our school campus. But for the most part, we allowed that person that was ignorant to the fact of life be ignorant, and we would handle that person for one person and not throw out the whole baby with all the bathwater.
We've got about 45 seconds before we have to break, but you were an outstanding not only football player, but also you excelled in basketball and baseball. Was there any question you would go to anything else other than football?
No, not really. You know, I was a good athlete, and because you're a good athlete, you can do things well in baseball, you can do things well in football. But But I was gifted. I could roll out of bed and score touchdowns. I could eat some chips and drink soda and not catch cramps as I'm running down the sideline. So for that, my parents were like, we got to learn how to let you learn how to work hard with your gift so it doesn't become something that becomes a curse, that actually you can elevate this thing to take yourself to a place that could have a great impact for Jesus, a great impact to many communities, and be something that you could be proud of.
We're talking with Sean Alexander, again, running back who played 9 seasons in the NFL. 8 of those with the Seattle Seahawks, went to a Super Bowl, and over his career in the NFL, rushed for more than 9,000 yards. And when we come back on the other side, we're going to be talking to him about how he made his choice to go to Alabama, because he had a lot of options when it came to college football, and also some of the coaches that have impressed him along the way in his life, and also about the personal side of Sean Alexander, because that's very interesting as well. We continue across the country and around the world with you on Sports Byline.